Welcome to the W5BSA repeater.
Good evening, folks. QST, this is Marty, WV5Y. It's once again time for another edition of the Houston AMSAT Net. This net meets on Tuesdays to discuss topics related to satellites, balloons, and other amateur-related topics. This is net number 1640, and it's 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday, December the 2nd, 2025. Which in UTC time is Wednesday, December the 3rd, 2025 at 0200. This is a directed net, and all calls should go through net control, and this net is dedicated to Andy McAllister, W5ACM. Thanks to Joe, W5BSA. We are on the 145.19 repeater in West Houston. And we're also on the 443.325 repeater in Katy, and both of those machines have a PL tone of 123.0. And then there's the 146.7 repeater downtown, and it's networked repeater system. And then the AMSAT DMR tie group, 98006, YSF Fusion, 11689, and the All-Star node, 572580, when those things are working. And then there's also Echolink, and that's over at Star AMSAT Star. Okay, I will now take any check-ins. Okay, well, we hope everybody had a good holiday, had a happy Thanksgiving there. So we're going to start with a little bit of information from the South Texas Blue Launch Team. Of course, the South Texas Blue Launch Team does hold their monthly meeting on the second Wednesday of the month, and that's at 4:30 p.m. here at a local restaurant. And then they have a meeting on Zoom on the Internet, and that takes place at 8 p.m. Central Time. And that is over at k5wh.net/zoom. So we appreciate Walter making things about the South Texas Blue Launch Team, you know, available so anybody can connect and listen in to ongoing discussions or bring up topics or whatever. So we appreciate that. And he has been making some tests there, missing up some balloons lately. They've been having some problems, though, having some failures. So they're trying to kind of narrow that down. And they sent up KC5JAR-12. And let's see, that was on 28th, Friday. And then that was from the Willowbrook Mall area, and it had no solar cells on that one, but it had a 1.5 lithium battery powering the tracker, and set for 5-minute transmit cycles. So I just want to see what kind of altitude we get to. They tried the lithium battery with two balloons and then with one big balloon, and so trying different things. So we'll be paying attention there and keeping track of the balloons that they do get up, and see where they go. Okay, we're switching gears over here to AMSAT News Service Weekly Bulletins. And this is ANS Bulletin number 334 from this week's editor, Frank Knoskis, N1UW. The AMSAT News Service Bulletins are a free weekly news and information service of AMSAT, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation. ANS publishes news related to amateur radio in space, including reports on activities of worldwide group of amateur radio operators who share an active interest in designing, building, launching, and communicating to analog and digital amateur radio satellites. And the news feed over on www.amsat.org publishes news of amateur radio in space as soon as our volunteers can post it. So please send any amateur satellite news or reports to ans-editor@amsat.org. Okay, you can also sign up for a free email delivery of the AMSAT News Service bulletins via the ANS list. If you'd like the bulletins to just show up in your inbox there. And to do that, you go over to mailman.amsat.org/pastorius/lists/ans.amsat.org. All right, registration is open for the 2026 European Astro Pi Challenge. Educators, do you want to send your students computer programs to space with the European AstroPi Challenge? AstroPi Mission Zero and Mission Space Lab are now officially open for the 2025-2026 Challenge. AstroPi is an ESA educator project run in collaboration with the Raspberry Pi Foundation and delivered nationally by the European Space Education Resource Offices, or the ESERO. And the project offers different levels of complexity. Okay, they start with Mission Zero, and that's for beginners up to 19 years old to learn to write a simple program that will run in space. Mission Zero, well suited for beginners, offers a chance for young people to create a piece of pixel art and have it displayed for astronauts to see on two special Raspberry Pi computers called AstroPis aboard the International Space Station. The deadline for Mission Zero submissions is 23rd of March, 2026.
W5BSA repeater.
Okay, then for the more experienced coders, also up to 19 years old, is the Mission Space Lab level, and it's to carry out a scientific task using a program that will run in space. And it's for more experienced coders. Mission Space Lab returns with a real-world scientific task, like calculate the speed of the ISS as accurately as possible, using the AstroPi sensors, or camera. And teams of 2 to 6 young people need to write a Python program that collects data from the AstroPi computers on the ISS to perform that calculation.
DL-123.
Okay, every team that submits a program that complies with the official guidelines will be awarded with a participation certificate. The submission deadline for Mission Space Lab is the 16th of February, 2026. The European AstroPi Challenge, or AstroPi for short, is a free educational project. It has 2 missions that young people up to 19 years old can participate in, depending on their programming abilities. Both missions use Python programming to create short computer programs that will run on the International Space Station. The AstroPi School Project platform offers educators a comprehensive suite of resources to engage students in space science and coding activities, as well as support and community engagement activities. Okay, we got the complete story. It's over at astro.pi.org/UTM_source=RPF_UTM_medium=website_UTM_campaign=homepage. And, of course, that link is over at amsatnet.com there, thanks to Bruce. So you can just go over there and click on the links he's made available if you'd like to follow along with any of the topics. And we'll thank the RaspberryPi.org for that information. Oops, okay, thanks for letting us know there. Mitch, we're keying down a little bit too long, it looks like, so maybe we'll have the repeater set there, or some of the links are probably keyed out a little faster, so we'll try to unkey a little bit more often. Let's see. Again, that link for Raspberry Pi is over at amsatnet.com, thanks to Bruce, KK5DO. This is Marty, WV5Y, with the Houston AmSatNet. Okay, you're quickly running out of time to get your 2025 coin. You can celebrate the 40th anniversary of amateur radio on human spaceflight and help support Golf and Fox Plus. And annual memberships start at only $120. Join the AmSat Presidents Club today and help keep amateur radio in space. And you just go over to www.amsat.org/join-v-amsat-presidents-club. Okay, if you'd like to call and make a quick phone check into the net, which you can, the number is 713-467-9870. You can send an APRS message, that's to West Virginia 5 Yankee, with no dashes and no numbers, as Andy used to like to say. Or you can send an email, and that's to wv5y@comcast.net. Optical communication systems test the limits of the FCC's authority. As the U.S. regulator of non-federal radio spectrum, The FCC has become one of the most important overseers of commercial space activity. No satellite system can realistically gain access to the U.S. market without prior FCC approval and oversight. The agency licenses space and earth stations and coordinates U.S. filings with the International Telecommunications Union, or the ITU. But optical communication systems, particularly optical ground stations, do not fit neatly within the FCC's statutory authority to regulate communications by wire or radio, considering they don't use either one. Optical transmissions are not radio. Rather, free space optical communications or laser comms use optical wavelengths, generally in the near-infrared portion of the spectrum, to transmit data between users' terminals. Traditionally, satellite communication systems have relied on radio frequency or RF transmissions within designed spectrum bands to relay signals between either satellites or from satellites to Earth. While these systems remain reliable and widely used, RF spectrum has inherent limitations, most notably finite bandwidth, increasing congestion, and atmospheric attenuation. Marty, the V5Y and the Houston AmSatNet. Optical communications offer a different path than RF. By transmitting optical wavelengths, typically in the near-infrared range, free space optical links can provide much higher data rates than RF. One key component is the optical ground station. Unlike a traditional RF ground station with a dish antenna, an optical ground station uses a telescope and optoelectronic components to transmit and receive laser signals. Still, laser comm poses unique technical challenges. The same narrow beam that enhances security also imposes constraints. RF signals can blanket wide areas. Atmospheric attenuation also remains a major challenge to laser comm. Atmospheric attenuators such as dust, smoke, fog, haze, and inclement weather impair the technology's ability to transmit information. FCC has long indicated that it does not have jurisdiction over optical inter-satellite links because they do not involve RF spectrum. If the FCC lacks authority over laser comm, it might be unable to apply licensing requirements, enforce technical standards, or impose other space access conditions such as orbital debris mitigation plans and post-mission disposal requirements. Uncertainty also carries real risks. Operators do not know whether FCC licensing will eventually be required, what conditions might apply, or whether or how the U.S. might ultimately coordinate internationally. Lack of clarity could also complicate global harmonization. Other jurisdictions may set their own rules, creating inconsistent standards. Yeah. Okay, you can check out how the FCC is learning to deal with optical communication systems and read the complete story over at satmagazine.com/story.php?=2088275968. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y with the Eastern Amsat Net, and we got a call there from Vern. Check in on the phone lines, WA0RCR in Wentzville, Missouri. And, of course, thanks to him, he transmits our net on 1.860 megahertz, full carrier AM. That's at 5:30 p.m. and 9 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays. So we appreciate Vern putting us on the top band. On the weekend, especially there on Saturday nights, and of course this is the time of the year when 160 starts coming to life. Okay, let's look around and see who we've had. Also checking in, we've got Andrew, KC5LWY, and he's down there in Galveston, and so we hope he's doing good this evening. And we've got Dale, WB0AKO, he's up there in Moorhead, Minnesota, and he does the backup archiving of the audio for the website, and we appreciate him doing that. We have had to use it in the past. Kai in 6ZZO is out there, and he's in McKinleyville, California, and he's one of our podcast listeners. He calls and checks in, so we appreciate when Kai calls and checks in. We had a good conversation there with him the other day. So I hope you also had a good holiday. Okay, from the Internet Relay Chat System, we've got Ken, AK0A, Clay, KG4OZW, Brian, KG4WIJ, Renee, NZ9T, Bob, K8WX, and WAQHB. Okay, then let's see, from Echo Link this evening, we've got Steve, KA5YFC. Good evening to Steve. And hello to Damien, AG9P, up there in Oconto, Wisconsin. And, of course, Damien's been listening for a long time with us. And there we got Andrew again, KC5LWY. Good evening to Andrew. Hope he's having a good evening and trying to stay warm, managing. Hopefully he's on the inside driving the ferry tonight. We have Dave, WB7DRU, up there in Howard Lake, Minnesota. I saw they're supposed to have some, all you guys are supposed to have some really frigid temperatures here over the next few days. I hope y'all are wrapping everything up good, including yourselves. And, of course, Dave's been listening with our net for decades. And hello to Mitch, 80HJ. He's up there in Jackson, Minnesota. Of course, Mitch puts on the Wednesday night AMSAT net, and that net takes place on DMR. So you can get on your DMR radio and get on the AMSAT DMR talk group, 98006. And then there's YSF Fusion, that's 11689. And you can check into Mitch's net on Wednesday, and that's at 9 p.m. Central Time. And if you're going to be doing any roving or making any rare grids available, they'd really like to know about that. So we appreciate Mitch checking in there with us. And And it looks like finally for the moment we've got NDOP N6UTC checked in. And he's over there in Long Beach, California. So I hope NDOP is doing good this evening. And y'all are having some not too bad of weather over that way. Okay, I know it's Long Beach. They're usually having good weather anyway. But this is Marty, WV5Y, with the Houston AmSatNet. All right, do you need new satellite antennas? Well, you can purchase M2 LEO packs from the AmSat store. And when you purchase through AmSat, a portion of the proceeds goes towards keeping amateur radio in space. And they got to work out so you get a bit of a discount, too, on their regular prices. So you can just go over to amsat.org/product-category/hardware. And one of the announcements we got a few weeks ago, was that they had restocked all of the M2 LEO packs there in the AmSat store. So we hope they still have some available. Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSatNet. A protocol extension for golf operations was worked out at the recent AmSat Space Symposium held in Phoenix, Arizona. AmSat software engineer Heimer Thor Sverrisson, W1ANT/TF3ANT, presented on the protocol extension he has been developing for satellite command and control systems, focusing specifically on improvements needed for the Gulf satellite project.
This is the W5BSA repeater.
The existing setup, utilizing the AMCOM program, has been successfully operational since 2015, primarily employing straightforward commands such as those for transitioning the spacecraft into safe or health modes. However, Gulf project necessitates a more complex command structure to handle longer payloads, especially those involving automated thermal controls, or ATCs, which require orbital parameters to be set as a cohesive unit. The discussion underlies of maintaining the proven AMCOM infrastructure, proposing to leverage existing telemetry tools like FoxTelem. The proposal includes utilizing 5 bits of telemetry data to provide feedback on the command status, thus ensuring that commands are transmitted successfully and effectively, addressing the limitations of the current system. Pivotal part of the discussion revolved around the concept of multi-part commands. Heimer illustrated a plan to modify the AMCOM command structure to allow the transmission of multiple segments in a single command using a sequential numbering system to keep track of these packets. The extension would also involve designating specific bits to indicate whether a command is multi-part and which piece of the command is being acknowledged or is missing. Hymer elaborated on the technical elements of the transmission protocol, detailing how to manage packet loss and potential sequence issues via a robust acknowledgement system. The system would require two threads of execution at the ground station, one for sending commands and another for handling incoming telemetry. This dual threading is crucial as it allows for more efficient communications and processing, maintaining system integrity in the event of packet loss or transmission delays.
DL-123.
A key component of the protocol will be adjusting how command data is structured and transferred with new formats proposed for command definitions. The transition from a CSV format, or comma-separated, to a more flexible and human-readable JSON format was suggested to accommodate the new capabilities, making it easier for engineering teams to integrate the changes into their workflows. Presentation included a demonstration of a simulator designed to visually represent the command transmission process, showcasing how the protocol would function under various conditions, including different rates of packet loss. The simulator was created in Python and is hosted on Hymer's GitHub repository, making it accessible for further exploration. During the question and answer section, audience members raised concerns related to the security of satellite communications, particularly regarding potential cyber threats. Hymer reassured participants that encryption and digital signature protocols are already in place for uplink communications, although downlink encryption remains restricted by FCC regulations against obscuring transmissions. Meeting concluded with a reflection on the practicality and challenges of implementing these proposed changes, emphasizing the continuous need for advancements in satellite communication protocols to cater to growing operational complexities and security requirements. Follow-up actions were identified, including finalizing the simulation details and incorporating feedback from the engineering team into the command structure proposal. Thankful remarks were exchanged, acknowledging the collaborative efforts required for successful implementation. You can read Hymer's complete paper, and that's over at www.amset.org/wp-content/uploads/2025/11/ss-43_sberrison.pdf. Okay, and we want to thank AMSAT software engineer Hymer Thor-Sverenson, W1ANT or TF3ANT, for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AMSAT Net. Yeah, we're just a couple minutes past the bottom of the hour here. So let's take a quick standby and see if we have anybody checking in. So we got any check-ins for the Houston AMSAT Net? Come now. Okay, the University of California, Davis will fly its ReelOp 2U CubeSat mission with two goals in mind. The primary goal of the mission will be to provide students with the educational opportunity to design, build, and test a satellite. Students will gain hands-on knowledge of the different subsystems of the satellite. They will learn about the use of amateur radio and how to use RF in order to communicate with spacecraft. Secondary goal of the mission is to demonstrate the feasibility of using hard disk drives as a low-cost alternative to reaction wheels for CubeSat attitude detection and control. This has the potential to reduce the financial barrier of entry into CubeSat development. A UHF GMSK downlink with a 96 kHz symbol rate on 437.400 MHz is proposed. Telemetry packets will use HDLC framing and a rate 1/2 convolutional forward error correction. Deployment from the ISS is planned for June 2026. And we want to thank the IARU for that information. Elements, or TLEs, often referred to as Keplerian elements, or KEPS in the amateur community, are the inputs to the SGP-4 standard mathematical model of spacecraft orbits used by most amateur tracking programs. So that's the file that you download weekly into your computer, into your satellite tracking program, and it updates all the locations of the satellites and puts them in the right locations. Weekly updates are completely adequate for most amateur satellites. The TLE bulletin files are updated daily in the first hour of the UTC day. New bulletin files will be posted immediately after reliable elements become available for new amateur satellites. You can find more information over at www.amsat.org/Keplerian-elements-resources. This week there are no additions or deletions to the AMSAT TLE distribution, so you can just use the same file that you had last week. And we want to say thanks to Joe Fitzgerald, KM1P, AMSAT Orbital Elements Manager, for that information. Of course, some of the satellites are probably going to actually update their locations, like the ISS, since they change its orbit actually pretty often. Okay, hey, if you want to fly the colors on your own grid expedition, you can get your AMSAT car flag and other neat stuff from our Zazzle store. And when you do, 25% of the purchase price of each product goes towards keeping amateur radio in space. And the URL is www.zazzle.com/AMSAT_gear. This is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AMSAT Net. Once again, if you'd like to call and check into the net, the number is 713-467-9870 for a quick phone check-in. You can also send an APRS message. That's to West Virginia 5 Yankee, no dashes, no numbers, And that email, wv5y@comcast.net. And then you can make a quick phone check-in. That's 713-467-9870. And our URLs there, our website, thanks to Bruce, our webmaster, KK5BO. It's over at AmSatNet.com. So you can go to AmSatNet.com and find out information on how you can get awards and certificates for making satellite contacts. And, of course, that comes from Bruce because he is the AmSat award guy as well as being a board of director member. So you can also find more of that, of course, over at AmSat.org. And then you can also, the good stuff over at AmSat.org is the status of the satellites that they post all the time. They let you know which ones are operational and which ones are not operational at the current time. And then there's the symposium and the store, all kinds of great stuff.
DL-123.
I'd say it might be a few more months before we learn there where next year's symposium will be, but we can't wait to hear what that's going to be. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, with the Houston AmSatNet. Amateurs and others around the world may listen in on contacts between amateurs operating in schools and allowing students to interact with astronauts and cosmonauts aboard the International Space Station. The downlink frequency on which to listen is on 145.800 MHz worldwide. Okay, we've got some successful contacts that happened. Let's see. We've got the Southwest State University in Kursk, Russia. Had a contact direct via UB3WCL. ISS call sign was RF0ISS. The crew member was Sergei Rykunov. The mentor was Amateur Radio Club Energia, RV3DR. The contact was successful on Saturday, November 22nd, 2025 at 1454 UTC. Then the Moscow Aviation Institute in Moscow, Russia, also had a contact direct via R2AS. Call sign was also RF0ISS, and the crew member was Oleg Tatanov, and the mentor was RV3DR, and the contact was Monday, 11/24/2025 at 1456 UTC. Okay, then we've got some upcoming contacts that haven't happened yet. We've got the Lincoln Magnet School in Springfield, Illinois. They have a contact via K9OK, and their call sign is presently scheduled to be NA1SS, and the crew member is Jonathan Johnny Tim, KJ5HKP, and the AIRS mentor is Charlie Safana, AJ9N, and the contact is Friday, December the 5th, 2025 at 1529 UTC. Then the Russian State Agrarian University, Moscow Agricultural Academy, named after K.A. Timuryazev, Moscow, Russia, has a contact to be determined, and the ISS call sign is scheduled to be RF0ISS, and the crew member is Sergei Kudzverchov, and the AIRS mentor, RV3DR, and the contact is Friday, December the 5th, 2025 at 1100 UTC. Okay, the crossband repeater on the International Space Station continues to be active. It's on 145.990 megahertz up with a PL tone of 67. And then you listen on 437.800 megahertz, which is the downlink. And if any crew member is so inclined, all they have to do is pick up the mic, raise the volume up, and they can talk on the crossband repeater. So give a listen. You just never know. You may end up talking to one of the astronauts.
W5BSA repeater.
Okay, the packet system is also active on the ISS, and it's on 145.825 megahertz up and down. But, as always, if there's an EVA docking or an undocking, the ARRIS radios are turned off as part of the safety protocol. And note, all the times are approximate. It's recommended you do your own orbital prediction or start listening about 10 minutes before our listed times. Okay, the latest information on the operation mode for the ISS can be found at www.ARRIS.org/current-status-of-iss-stations.html. And the latest list of frequencies in use can be found at www.ARRIS.org/contact-v-iss.html. And we want to thank Charlie Safana, AJ9N, one of the ARRIS operation team mentors, for that information. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, in the Houston AmSatNet. AmSat ambassadors provide presentations, demonstrate communicating through amateur satellites, and host information tables at club meetings, ham fests, conventions, maker fairs, and other events. And currently, it looks like there are no events scheduled. We're getting right down to the end of the year. But we want to thank Bo Lowry, W4FCL, the director of the AmSat Ambassador Program, for that information. ARRIS, the amateur radio in the International Space Station group, is excited to premiere a new video all about amateur radio on the International Space Station. Thanks to Nicole Ayers, KJ5GWI, or @astro_Ayers on X, who recorded this during her time on the International Space Station. You can join them on Tuesday, December the 2nd, at 1800 UTC or 1 p.m. Eastern Time, well, for the big reveal. But even if we miss that time, we should be able to find it, hopefully, on YouTube. And that's over at youtube.com/ARRIS Live. And we want to thank AmSat UK for that information. Hey, if you're one of those folks looking to kick back over the holidays, maybe play with some radios, do some ham radio contacts, and make some maybe contacts through some satellites, and maybe also build and fly your own rockets. Well, reviewed spaceflight simulators are available for your Android and iOS phones. Free app named Spaceflight Simulator by Team Curiosity can be found at the Google Play and the Apple App Stores. You can build any rocket you'd like from available parts and explore the planets and our solar system as you wish. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y in the Houston AmSat net. Okay, looks like we're going to switch gears here over to Space Daily, and got a little bit of time here left, it looks like. Okay, this is from the Telegraph. Let's see, from yesterday. Putin's Saturn II missile explodes on takeoff. Russia's Saturn II intercontinental ballistic missile exploded after crashing back to Earth in yet another failed test. The nuclear-capable hypersonic missile, dubbed the world's deadliest weapon, was launched from the Yasny test site in Russia's Orenburg region. Just seconds after liftoff, the Sarmat RS-28 rocket veered off course, emitting black plumes of smoke before the fiery wreck plummeted to the ground. The missile landed near the launch pad in a huge fireball, emitting a purple cloud of smoke into the sky. During a previous test launch, the munition exploded at the Plesetsk Cosmodrome, 500 miles north of Moscow, back in September 24, leaving a huge crater at its launch site. Despite this, Vladimir Putin expressed hopes weeks ago that the Sarmat would be ready next year, saying, "This year we will put the Sarmat through combat trials, and next year deploy it on combat duty." The missile is 35 meters long, about 100 feet, with a range of about 11,200 miles and a launch weight of more than 200 tons, and is designed to deliver nuclear warheads to targets in the U.S. and Europe. Vyacheslav Volodin, a member of Russia's Security Council, previously claimed it could hit the European Parliament in Strasbourg in under 4 minutes. The missile was scheduled for deployment in 2018, but repeated test failures have led to its postponement, with only one Sarmat flight assessed as partially successful to date. Defense Express, a Ukrainian publication focusing on defense and security, wrote that the eclipse almost certainly showed the Saturn II because of the configuration of the silo on the Yasny test site and the lack of an announcement of a satellite launch for strategic forces exercise. Pavel Podvig, a UN researcher and director of the Russian Nuclear Forces Project, told the Telegraph that other missiles can practically be ruled out. He said there are really only two options here logistically. One is the older SS-18 missile, sometimes known as the Satan 1, or this new Sarmat, Mr. Podvig said. With the older missile, I think it's unlikely because that missile has not been tested since 2013. The nominal test site for the new missile was moved from Plesetsk, 500 miles north of Moscow, to the Dombrovsky Air Base near Yasny after the other silo was destroyed in 2024, Mr. Podvig said. Satellite images of the latest launch appeared to show the missile landing just over half a mile from its silo and leaving a 70-meter-wide crater, according to analysts. Russia is likely to continue testing the missile despite the failure, Mr. Podvig said. In the greater scheme of things, there's definitely a notion that Russia needs this kind of large, heavy missile that can carry a lot of warheads and penetration aids to counter U.S. missile defense, he said. So it's kind of a political statement as much as it is military capability. If you look at the military utility, Russia will be okay without the Sarmat. The political nature of the program is quite significant, so they will probably try to make it work. Etienne Marcus, an associate fellow at France's Foundation for Strategic Research think tank, said this would be the fifth failure in a row for the strategic missile, presented as the new flagship of Russia's nuclear deterrence. Its submarine-launched counterpart, the Bulava SLBM, does not seem to be in much better shape. Yet, it is precisely this nuclear deterrence that allows Russia to engage in what is called aggressive sanctuarization, that is, to wage wars of aggression like the invasion of Ukraine while threatening any potential supporters of the aggressed countries with nuclear retaliation. Okay, this is Marty, WV5Y, and the Houston AmSatNet. Okay, you can join AMSAT today by going to launch.amsat.org. And in addition to regular membership, AMSAT offers membership to societies, which is a recognized group, club, or organization. And primary and secondary school students are eligible for membership at no charge. So that's from kindergarten all the way up to master's degree at age 25. And memberships are available for annual and lifetime terms. You can contact info@amsat.org for additional membership information. We get a 7-3, and remember to upkeep amateur radio in space. That comes from this week's ANS editor, Frank Kanoskis, N1UW, and that's f.karnauskas@amsat.org. Of course, ANS is a service of AMSAT, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation, and they do reside at 712 NE Suite 1653, Washington, D.C. 20002, and AMSAT is a registered trademark of the Amateur Radio Satellite Corporation. Okay, our time. time has come to a close here. We hope everybody enjoyed this week's version of the HoustonAmps.net. Stay safe out there. Keep playing with those radios, making lots of satellite contacts. And we look forward to catching everybody next week. So from Andy at W5ACM and Bruce, KK5DO, up there in Roman Forest, and myself, Marty, WV5Y in Northwest Houston, we say 7-3 for this week from the Houston AmSat Net.